Hey, welcome to season two of The Protectors. So now we've rebranded a little bit. It's now Jason Piccolo's The Protectors. Amazing guests keep popping in. And it's I'm going to have sporadic co-hosts, may have a permanent co-host coming up here in the future. We'll see. But yeah, The Protectors is back for season two. Thank you for joining me. Great guest tonight. He's been on a show, The Protectors. He's been on Pick Rep. He's been on all sorts of different things, IG Live. But yes, we're going to welcome Tony Blauer tonight. Tony is an absolute expert in the game of fear. And fear affects all of us. I don't care if you're the hardened operator from SEAL Team 6, from the unit, from whatever. Tony knows fear. We all have fear. So tonight I'm joined by Tony Blauer, and I'm also joined by Alicia. Alicia has also been my co-host. She's a combat veteran. She's a TEDx speaker, and she's just an all-around great person. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in the crew, and we're going to talk fear. We're going to talk whatever else we kind of get around to. So thanks a lot for joining us tonight. There they are. The legendary Tony Blauer and my awesome co-host Alicia tonight. How are you guys doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. I am just happy to be here. I was telling Jason earlier, Monday is traditionally my absolute favorite day of the week. I love the opportunity to have a fresh start, to start off strong. Today's been a little interesting as I'm settling into, you know, that this quarantine state is likely going to be, it is the new normal. So what does that look like? And it's not just a typical Monday, it's a quarantine Monday. So dealing with that a little bit today, but I'm just happy to be here.
Dude.
Tony.
You want me to talk now?
You have been. Tony, I'm going to let you talk. We're in a different format now. Tony's been on the show a bunch of times, but this is The Protectors. We take it down a couple notches and we just kind of talk. So, Tony, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm a little fried right now. And, you know, about 3 days ago, it was funny. A good friend of mine, Brian McKenzie, who runs the Art of Breath program. We've been friends for over a decade. And he posted, I think, 2-3 days ago, where he said, you know, all of a sudden, he said, I just had to lie down. He said, my body was telling me, you're fried. And, you know, he had a picture of, I guess he had his buddy or so take a picture of him on a couch, just kind of meditating, chilling out. And it was weird because about 2 days ago, like even wearing glasses, things were getting cross-eyed. I was like, wow, what's going on? And I just realized that for me, and you know this because we've spoken offline, Jason, got to know each other, all of my business, all of my revenue, all of my business was in person. So the, you know, when the shelter in place order happened in the last, I guess, 5 weeks, we have postponed and canceled over 15 classes, all around the world. You know, we had training going on, you know, in the UK, in Australia, in USA. And, like I sat there like for 2 days, it was kind of like the power, you know, when the power goes off and you're like, this is fun. The power's off. Okay. But then like a day later, you're like, okay, you know, I need the power. And then, you know, 2 days later, you're like, okay, this isn't funny. So for a couple of days I was okay. And then I realized this could kill my entire business. I can't sustain this. And we had to pivot. And within a week we had, two new websites. I had my training team design and develop an online course. We stood up another course, garage gym program, and you know, we went hard on our fear management stuff and started promoting it. And then what I did is I realized, well, how do new people get to know who I am? And so I went crazy recontacting all the people I've done podcasts with, and you've been very gracious to give me some time, but just to let people know, hey, we're still around. And not only that, you know, we're not trying to sell you Tupperware or toilet paper. We actually have something that you might really want to take a deep look at now. And you know, I've been studying the psychology of fear since the 80s. So it wasn't like we pivoted and came up with a new approach to fear management. This is something that I've always talked about from day one. But all of that to say, I'm good. I'm fried because I've been literally working 7 days a week, 16, 17, 18 hour days. So.
Well, I like how you brought up your fried because, you know, the thing is you almost have to rebrand. You know, I'm starting a second season. I didn't plan on starting a second season for a while of this show. I didn't plan on interviewing people every night. I didn't, you know, I have a daytime job. But you have to, man. But the thing is, you have something that not everybody has. And I brought it up in the intro, and it's fear. Everybody right now has some sort of fear, whether that's a paycheck, whether that's fear of the unknown, whether it's, hey, am I going to have enough toilet paper for the next month or whatever. But you have been studying it, which makes you a commodity, and which, you know, outside of like our friendship off the line and everything, I want to have you on the show today and to talk about this concept right here. No fear, not no fear, but knowing it. Mm-hmm. I want you to touch on that. I want us to be able to follow you. This is for anybody out here who doesn't know who Tony Blauer is. This is Tony. Tell us about knowing what fear is.
So let's talk about the name for a second, because most people are familiar with the no fear without the K and the W, right? The famous T-shirt line, the adrenaline company, the no fear company. And I always make a joke. So we've been using the term no fear. And actually it's now a registered trademark of ours as of about a year or two ago. Because it really turned into its own brand and its own stuff. Most people who know who I am know me from the combatives, the defensive tactics side. You know, we've been training tier one operators, SWAT, military, law enforcement, emergency services for decades now. And one of the things that we always taught them in the class was the importance of fear. And what we noticed was that, and this goes back to some of the research I did in the 80s, where we kind of had like a fight club thing happening in the 80s. It was kind of legendary. We used to call them the panic attack drill. So you Google Tony Blauer panic attack. What should come up, hopefully is not a panic attack, but should come up the old videotapes that I did with Panther Productions back in the 1986 is when we filmed those. And what it was a force on force exercise. So we were doing like fight club type stuff with equipment, Kyokushin Kai helmet, hockey gauntlets, you know, baseball shin guards. It was way before I developed the high gear equipment. So it was just kind of this Frankenstein blend of equipment. And every month we would do these seminars where, so for example, let's say you and Alicia showed up, you know, we'd say, hey, what's your background? What do you do? And then we would give you questions. What would you do if you were at there were no ATMs there, but just to give an example, what would you do if you got mugged at an ATM? What would you do if someone tried to, you know, rob you, and so on and so forth? And we give these hypotheticals, and people would tell us, well, like, and where I'm going with this, and it's so important, is if you were a boxer, right? So everyone thinks they're prepared for violence, and I'm sort of in a rambly way, but it'll come together, explaining why this research on fear is something that you should look more deeply at, is because it was extracted from studying violence, right? You can be, you know, afraid to miss your putt on a golf course, but that's not violence, right? So you can have performance anxiety that makes you choke, but it's not the same as how do I manifest courage when I'm scared that this might be it, that I'm about to get maimed or killed. And so I studied this for like 13 years. We did force on force scenarios at least once a month. And if someone had a boxing preference, if I said, well, you know, what would you do if, you know, a guy came up to you and blah, blah, blah. Well, the boxer would say, well, I hit him with a liver shot, I hit him with an uppercut. if like someone had a Taekwondo background, they would say, well, I create space, I'd step back, I'd throw a kick. If someone had a wrestling background, judo background, I'd step and I'd grab my throw. What I'm talking about is significant because the art or system that you practice becomes your unconscious bias. And the unconscious bias is what you end up doing in a high stress situation. And what we noticed here, and I'm sure some people are going, how the hell does this tie to fear? When we did the scenarios, my role-playing people were so good that everybody, regardless of style, when the attack happened, flinched. So they'd be standing there, boxer, taekwondo, wrestler, street fighter, and they'd be sucked into a verbal situation, then whack, all of a sudden the attack would happen. It'd be a grab, a lunge, a choke. And everybody did some sort of micro flinch. And this was actually what spawned the whole spear system, which is the system that I teach. But in that, I noticed this, because they were, regardless of gender, regardless of background, regardless of experience, and I'll say this, I love this line, the people that manage their fear manage to fight. So I had a decade of scenarios filming on, you remember VHS? VHS, big RCA camera. We'd film this stuff, and there were people who'd quit, people who would tap, people that would turn their back. But the people that stayed in the fight were the ones that managed their fear. And so in 1988, I launched a program out of all of this research called Cerebral Self-Defense, The Mental Edge. Cerebral Self-Defense, Mental Edge. That morphed into the No Fear program. This here, which, you know, we'll get a graphic for your show notes, became the cycle of behavior, which was a flow chart for the mind of what happens when we get a fear spike, what happens to our breathing, what happens to our thinking, how is it that our theoretical brain, which is our executive function, our theoretical idea of what we would do, held in executive function, goes, well, I would do this. In a crisis, I'll be fine, I'll do this. In a crisis, I'll pivot. In a crisis, I'll have this courage, don't worry. And then when it actually happens, people are freaking out, or they're what I like to call it, emotional inertia, the mind's inability to move. You know, inertia from physics is, a body's inability to move. But emotional inertia is, I know what to do, I know what I should be doing, but I can't get out of bed. I've now created this state of depression. And all of this is tracked back to the noxious effect of fear. And so, can't believe how long this answer is. I apologize. But there's so much there.
Keep going, man. I like this. Is a good answer.
I'm trying to compress like 30 years of research in here. But I've taken this model. I've lectured at hospitals. I've got clients who are psychologists who use it to help their clients. It's insanely powerful. At the end of the day, I could teach somebody all the physical skills in the world, but they could still fixate on fear, hesitate, and not make it happen, whether it was a weapon tactic, whether it was an empty hand tactic, or whether I tell people, like, you know, your ability to manage fear actually influences everything you do in your life. And so this is not only personal development, it's professional development, it's tactical development, that underneath everything, when we peel the onion and everything, it's our relationship to fear. The acronym that I want to share with everybody is the most important one, is this false expectations appearing real, false expectations appearing real. And that's what's happening right now, where you look at the news and you hear something you don't want to hear and you get a fear spike. And the fear spike is that little adrenaline dump where someone says, okay, you know, hey, we're going to be locked down for another X amount of days or a month, or the check's not coming, whatever it is. The fear spike triggers this idea in your head that you then turn into a movie in your mind. And that's the false expectations appearing real. It's when you're visualizing a future event that is immobilizing you in the present. It's a negative event where you're going, okay, that's it, I'm going bankrupt, that's it, I'm getting divorced, that's it, I can't feed my kids, that's it, I'm getting my ass kicked, whatever it is. And the danger of that is profound, right? Because you know, and this is a line right out of our clinics and our workshops. If you need to solve problems, you also can't become one. If you need to solve problems, you can't become one. And a lot of people become the problem because what they do is they shirk away from their responsibility. And we spell responsibility here, response hyphen ability, i.e. your ability to respond.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
I feel like I just was in therapy. So when we were talking earlier, I'm like, oh my gosh. So we were talking earlier about, you know, Monday is my favorite day of the week, and I'm blinding everybody with these lights. Monday is my favorite day of the week, and I'm somebody who's very positive. I've implemented this gratitude practice that has really helped me just be positive and receive opportunities and really finding positive in unfortunate situations even, which is something I picked up when I was in Afghanistan. But today I woke up and I thought, it's Monday. I knew we were going to be in quarantine for a certain amount of time, but now that it's this, I'm not sure how long we're going to be in quarantine. I'm not quite ready to say this is the new normal. And the reason I've been hesitating, and I even go and say like hesitate and die. I'm somebody who doesn't like to hesitate, but I'm hesitant to admit this is the new normal because it's scary. I have this fear of the unknown, of not knowing what's next or how long this is going to last. But exactly what you said about, you know, how can I not let the fear of the future or the unknown immobilize me today? I think that's absolutely brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, the word hesitation is actually an important thing here. And I'm going to show you a thing. I can't even talk today. if you look here, right on the chart there, I'm trying to time this with the, can you guys see? I'm screwing this up.
Which one?
Well, we can see it.
Are you able to pop this in the video, Jason, if he sends it afterwards?
Yeah.
We'll get it in there.
You can read it like story time.
But you see doubt, hesitation, fixation, anxiety.
Yeah.
In the fear loop, doubt.
Oh, yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But you said doubt, hesitation.
I'm blocking my camera while I'm doing it. So this is like that was the most unathletic thing I've ever done. So there's a part in our research that we've identified in the fear loop that what happens is this. I call you up, I go, Alicia, let's go today. And you go, okay, what are we doing? Nothing, we're gonna just shelter in place. And then you say, I wonder how long this is gonna go. So there's a moment of doubt. So the line, the four stages are doubt creates hesitation, hesitation creates fixation, fixation unchecked creates anxiety. Not clinical anxiety. I mean, for some people, it could turn into that. The impact on mental health for everybody here is horrible. Even just the idea of like, I guess this is the new normal. Like that's a real defeatist statement to say, because underneath, whether you're writing a new meme or sharing a meme or whatever, is really, you know, if we said, okay, truth serum, people would say, I really want things to be back the way they were. I want to go out. I want to, you know, and so on and so forth. But I wanted to, because you use the word hesitation, I want to talk a little bit about that, because the doubt becomes hesitation, hesitation becomes fixation, fixation becomes anxiety. And in a quasi-normal person, again, it's not a clinical anxiety. It's like, you know, I get on FaceTime with you and body language is 60% of communication approximately. And I go, hey, what's the matter? And you go, nothing. And I can see in your body language, you're stressed, you're overthinking stuff, you're not working out, you didn't eat right, you didn't sleep, whatever it is, it shows, right? That's energetically, it's showing. So, you know, when you see those things as kind of like a domino effect, what I do, and I love explaining this to people, because there's a lot of people who talk about managing fear, but they, and I don't mean to insult people, and it's not to compare or contrast here, but there's a lot of people who are teaching people about fear, but it's done in a way that either it's very academic, pedantic, obsequious. I use big words on purpose because most people don't know what they mean. And that's where you get like someone comes in and they go, well, that's exactly this. The amygdala has hijacked the, and you're like, what? And now this subject matter expert has made you even more, you know, scared in, oh, you think they have an answer, but you're like, I'm not sure. But, and now you're going down this rabbit hole. And then there are other people that just go into, well, you know, the no fear state, the no fear. And so now you want to be in flow. You want to be perfect. And you want to, and those are outliers. When you read about like amazing athletes or amazing actors or amazing artists that do crazy things. I remember interviewing, because I've interviewed victims of violence and fighters. And what I was looking for, intuitively looking for, was this thread that connected everybody. And that was the line I shared earlier. The people that manage their fear manage to fight. And the fight could be, I'm fighting for my family. I'm fighting for my marriage. I'm fighting for my business. I'm fighting for my health. You got to manage fear first, because when you peel that onion, that's everything. If you stay in the fear loop, right? The fear loop is the red area. If you stay in the fear loop, that means that's physically and metaphorically inaction. You're just stuck there, right? You need to get out of the fear loop. So on a regular basis, what I do, and I said, like, I don't want to be pedantic. I don't want to be, you know, no, you just got to like do this and everything will work out. I defined over the years something called the duress path. And the duress path was when you've got a plan or a strategy, you're moving forward because you've committed to a plan, but you still have the weight of fear on you. You're thinking, I hope this works out. I wonder if we're going to get out of here. I hope that. But the difference is, by creating, and those are the three lines here, the three concepts. So you've got red means, keep doing that, sorry, buddy. Red means, you know, I'm stuck in the fear loop. The yellow and the green are parallel lines. But one is that flow state, and one is that duress path. Let me give you an example. You're driving somewhere, and you're a little bit late, so you're driving a little bit over the speed limit, and you come up to a four-way intersection, and you're doing, it's 45 miles an hour, but you're doing 60, and then the light turns yellow. Real answer, don't overthink this. Do you hit the brakes or do you hit the gas?
Hit the gas.
Okay. Gas.
Look at you two, reckless drivers. So
it's dangerous to hit the brakes.
Yeah, but it could also be dangerous to hit the gas. The point being, okay. And this is the example here, is the number one kind of Socratic question you need to ask yourself is, what's the scenario? Because what you're doing as you're driving up there is, if you're a good driver, you're taking in all of this information. So if I said to you, you're late because you got your kid in the back seat, Jason, and you're late to a dentist or soccer practice or whatever, in another time, obviously there's no soccer practice now, you might actually hit the brakes there because you see a car coming who's also going to try and blow the light or race the light, right? You're taking in all this information. So people, the real answer is, it depends. Usually I'll hit the gas, but it depends. I might. Have you ever seen that happen where it turns yellow when you hit the gas and then the car in front of you chickens out?
Yeah.
Right? And now you're like, oh, and usually like you start swearing and then improvising, you know, tough words about the person in front of you. But the message here in this silly little example, folks, is that there's no 1 + 1 = 2 in this equation. There's sometimes I do this and sometimes I do that. And fear influences all of that. And it's subtle. Hitting the gas is a fear response. Hitting the brakes is a fear response. And it's really about managing our fear in real time, that, and then adapting, like I call it adaptive courage, adapting our decision. And then the next step. So we call that goal, action, result, plan. And then, I mean, the whole flow goes from there. But what I try to do with this strip map is use language and expressions that make it very easy for somebody to understand. So for example, I'll say to somebody, if we're doing some corporate coaching or one-on-one, and we're talking about it, I'll say, okay, have you, you know, when do you feel fear? And describe that. And they go, well, this. And I go, so if this scenario A happens, you're good. And they go, yeah. I go, that's your comfort zone. And then when this starts to happen, or do you immediately stop, or do you feel a little uncomfortable? And they go, "What? You know, there, I'm so, I'm okay." And I go, "Let's call that your discomfort zone." And then I go, "And now if we change the parameters of the dynamics there, and you like recoil from that, you're like, I'm not doing that. We call that the holy shit zone." And people always laugh. They go, "Holy shit zone, that's great." So I've tried to, you know, use language that makes people go like, "I remember that." And I want you to think about this chart that I'm going to share with you as like a holographic strip map. And both of you are familiar with strip maps. The idea is, you know, there's so many like military stories of people, you know, failing land nav where they gave up, you know, hundreds of yards from,
a ton of times. Yeah.
Right? And to the point in certain units where they find people who died just around the corner from them. Had they gone another half mile, they'd have survived. Well, what makes somebody who's in a selection process, mentally tough, wants to be in the military, wants to be a protector, what makes somebody sit down against a tree or a rock and just stop? If you peel the onion, it's not, "Oh, they were tired, they took a rest and they fell asleep." It's fear. It's and some people can argue semantically, but at the end of the day, it's fear. It comes down to it, you know. So that's it. I'm sorry, I'll hijack the show. I'll talk for hours on this.
That was perfect. That was absolutely perfect. That's what we're here for. We're here to talk about the fear and everything that goes with it. I know Alicia's chomping at the bit to ask some questions. What do you got, Alicia?
I have so many. I just think it's so interesting that you referenced the land navigation, because that's what my TEDx talk was on. But about when you get lost, and, you know, certainly right now is a time in life where people probably are feeling very lost and it's, you're uncertain. Don't freak out. Don't run around. Don't stop and give up. But what are those steps? Like, how can we take a breath, look around, like you said, evaluate, don't hit the brakes. Don't, you know, press on the gas, but let's like start to evaluate the situation and look around and see where we are and calculate what the next best move is. And I would love to talk to you about how we practice no fear, because we talked about CrossFit earlier and your son, Nick, who is my coach. And one of the reasons I love to do CrossFit is because for me, it's an exercise in mental toughness. So I know if I go into the gym, there's going to be some crazy hard workout that he programmed, and I'm going to look at it and say, this is my holy shit zone, or like, can I do this? This is uncomfortable, but I know that I'm going to make it through, and I'm just going to keep going and have to manage the fear. And when I get through that, I'm like, holy crap, I actually made it through this. Now I can go into my day, and any challenge that life throws my way, I can handle it. And I think one of the other benefits is when I do something like CrossFit where I am, there's a coach there supervising, holding me accountable, that I know if I start to take it easy and start to pick up the same reps all the time. And I think you were talking about it earlier, like if you're shooting the same bullet, you shoot 9 bullets through the same hole, you're wasting bullets. So if I'm constantly day in lifting the same weights and I'm an expert at that, but never try to do anything else, am I getting better? So having somebody there to push me even to go a little bit harder and constantly pushing me out of my comfort zone is helpful. So I would love to talk about how we can practice this, getting out of this fear zone in times like we're in today with COVID-19.
Yeah, cool. Great stuff. And I love when you talk about my son. It makes me so happy. So, you know, the idea, people don't realize you can practice courage. Nobody likes the feeling of fear. Nobody likes the feeling of, let me qualify with nobody, because you knew people in the military that were adrenaline junkies. You would swear they had a death wish. They were like, "Let's go," right? And I make this joke all the time. Like, if I'm going to learn skydiving, I don't want to learn it from a 23-year-old adrenaline junkie who just, you know, got a Red Bull sponsorship. I want to learn it from like a 55-year-old guy that used to be in the military, and I'm going, "He's still alive. Okay, teach me," right? I want somebody who's afraid of dying to teach me how to not die. Not somebody who doesn't care. And I make this joke because I always tell people, you can't be brave if you're not afraid. Again, I'll say it, I love the concept. You can't be brave if you're not afraid. And everyone wants to be brave. When we see courageous behavior, if you're of sound mind and body, you're like, "Wow, I wonder if I could do that." Or that's so inspiring, right? We're attracted to courage. And so in our classes, we try to get people to connect to this, going, we don't like fear, and we like courage. And so what's the connection there? What is the opposite of courage? Well, a lot of people quickly go, well, the opposite of courage is cowardice, right? And I go, no, the opposite of courage is discourage. And they're like, what? And I usually write it on a board. I can't do that here. But if I write the word discourage, D-I-S hyphen courage, I know what courage looks like, but I discourage myself. Remember the movie metaphor I shared with you? False expectations appearing real. I don't see myself doing that. Think about how many times you've heard somebody say, and maybe even yourself, someone goes, you know, you should do this. And you go, yeah, that's a good idea. And you go, you know, but I don't really see myself doing that. And it could be, if I tie this to a workout, I mean, how many times have you walked in, looked at the WOD on the whiteboard and went, that's going to kill me, right? I'll never make it through that. But how many times have you died during a CrossFit workout? Zero.
Zero. Right?
But you say that's the language that we use. This is going to kill me. Oh my God. And then what happens, just like your military training, adaptation, stress inoculation, you do it enough and enough and enough. And now suddenly and what's interesting, because you could come in and I could say, okay, we're going to do Fran today. And you know that if you're really going to push it, and for people who don't know what Fran is, it's a hellacious legendary workout, 21.9. and it's a legendary CrossFit workout, but anyone who does it hard suffers. And yeah. So I've only met two people in my life in the last 14 years that look forward to doing Fran, you know, because if you're doing it properly, you're pushing yourself. So if I say to you, you know, let's go for a run. If it's a jog, it's one thing. If it's a run, like, do you like to run personally?
I do not anymore. No.
Okay.
Good. I would rather do Fran than run a couple miles.
Okay. So, but that's a great example because I don't like to run either. But if I say, hey, today we're going to run a mile. Immediately, as soon as I say that, and I can't see your face right now, but if I say, hey, let's go run a mile, then tell me the truth. Jason, pop us back here. Tell me the truth. So if I say, I'm going to drive it to LA and we're going to go for a mile run. What's going through your head right now?
Oh, shit.
Right. So here, right. Away, but understand this, and listen, everybody listening to this, what Alicia's doing is your mind has started you running. And you're like,
I'm thinking, how fast are you going to run? Can I keep up? I'm dehydrated.
But yeah. You've created this movie, and the movie in your mind, and I love explaining this to people, the movie in your mind is you're the director, you're the screenwriter, you're the casting director. You cast yourself as victim number one instead of superhero in an action movie. So you went, oh. Now, for a CrossFit workout, if you see, guys, you have a choice today. You can do a mile run or you can run 400. You like 400 meter run? You're good with that.
Yeah.
Right. But look at your face. If you smile, yeah, I can do 400. But
what, okay, sure.
What if I whispered in your ear and I said, we're going to do 400s. We're going to run 400. Right. And so I always tell people this, and I got this from years ago when I developed a program for training people to handle multiple assailants. I get them in a class where I go, emotionally, psychologically, physically, are you prepared to protect yourself against one person? And they go, yeah. And then I go, what about two? And they go, I go, you haven't even fought yet, and you're not even giving yourself a chance. I go, what about three? They go, well, not three, obviously not three. I go, but you haven't even fought yet, and you decided not a chance. This is a choiceless choice, and in a choiceless choice, the only choice is to fight. We're in a choiceless choice right now with the pandemic. The only choice we have is to fight. And we can't solve the problem if we become the problem. The problem starts with our belief in ourselves. Our belief in ourselves, when we peel that onion, is I'm afraid I can't do it, that I'm not going to be successful. But if you sit there and do nothing, whatever the universe throws at you is just going to land on you. Yeah. Or you can maneuver. But the maneuver, you know, battle through maneuver, right? The maneuver part is, can I turn fear into a fuel so that fear is my co-pilot and not my backseat driver? For most people, fear is their backseat driver. You're going to fuck this up. You're going too fast. You're going too slow. You missed the turn. You suck, right? Let's go for a run. Oh, Tony, how fast is he going to run? I'm going to get dehydrated. I'm going to have shin splints. I'm going to hurt my back. That is your fear. But if you go, you know what? I'm going to go for a run. I can do 400. I'm going to run 400. And then I'm going to look over at my fear and I'm going to go, hey, motherfucker, let's do another 400. And pretty soon you've done a mile. And then the experience you talked about, the that fleeting dopamine hit you get when you finish the workout and high five Nick and you go, wow, I did it. I didn't think I was going to make it. Right. That's the moment where I get goosebumps now thinking about that. Right. Because yeah. we all go through that. And it's one of the reasons I was an advocate of, you know, back in the day when I first got involved with the CrossFit community, I would tell people separate to, cause I, most of my students are military, law enforcement, firefighters, emergency services. I'd say like, if you're going to supplement your personal defense training with something, do it with CrossFit because it's always a fight and it's always anaerobic and you always, there's moments when you want to quit, but you don't. Right. And so if you got to pick up the bar one more time, it's a fight between, I can't do it. And your coach is yelling, come on, do it. And you're like, I don't have any more. I don't have any more gas. Again. But you talk to yourself through that and you make it happen. It was interesting once, one of my students was doing max effort deadlifts and kept failing on a PR attempt on a deadlift. And, you know, went like dropped, didn't even get it off the ground really, you know, but he had that rush, you know, that rush you get, like where you're like, okay, what, you know, he walks away and one of his friends takes chalk and draws, you know, those outlines, like the victim outline. That you see, like, yes. I've seen outline. He draws the shape of a body under the weights, and so the other guy who just failed the PR is walking around going. He turns back, he sees that, and the guy says, "You know, that's one of your kids under the weight. That's somebody you love under the weight." And he walks over to it, steps in, boom, and lifts it. What it was using fear as a fuel to give that extra little bit. Like, what's your max PR for a deadlift? Do you know it?
I lost my audio. Minus 240.
Okay, 240. If you were, that's your PR, 240?
Yes.
Okay, good. So if you were about to lift 240 and you know that's like that's everything you got, and just as you were about to pull the weights, you saw a butterfly come flitting in through your peripheral vision, fly around in front of you and land on the weight, and your brain goes, oh my god, this is my max weight and a butterfly just landed on it. Do you think it's enough? And this is, again, a cartoony example. The hypothetical is that we introduce doubt, which becomes hesitation, which becomes fixation, which becomes non-clinical anxiety, where you just went, I can just barely lift 240, and now it's 240 and a butterfly. I'm not going to be able to lift it, right? So what it is, again, it's that movie, a futuristic movie that involves our failure, our destruction, our demise.
Yeah.
That immobilizes in the present. So, you know, so how do you practice? I went off on a crazy tangent because I love this shit. But,
it's so good.
But you asked me how do you practice no fear? You change your relationship with fear. You tell yourself, so, you know, the way I spell no fear, K N O W.
Yeah.
I spell no doubt, K N O W. No doubt. The moment that I have doubt about something, If you were my coach, Alicia, and I went, and this is an interesting thing because I'll write a book one day. I've been making fun of this for about 5 years now. Right now, I just got the working title, but the book will be titled "Cheering Isn't Coaching." Cheering isn't coaching. And so, if I saw you struggling with something, and I came up to you and I went, "You can do this," right? You know, you got this. Come on, you got this. You're nowhere near your potential. Let's go. Like,
yeah.
You may need that in a context, but what if right. What if the doubt is actually you're worried about hurting your back, pulling a hamstring,
yeah.
Yeah. That you didn't have, that you didn't want to talk about? Listen, I've coached fighters for years. They're type A, like the three of us on here, you know, but I'll see a fighter perform poorly in a fight, then I'll go, dude, like, what the hell was that? Like, in the second round, you were gassed.
Yeah.
And then what comes out when you peel the onion is, yeah, coach, I hurt my ribs 3 weeks ago, but I didn't want to tell you because I knew you'd pull me out of the fight and I couldn't do my road work because I couldn't breathe. It would hurt me when I go, so you lied to me about your, like, you could have been seriously injured. But why didn't the fighter, if I peel the onion, I didn't want you to pull me out of the fight because I injured my ribs. I couldn't do my road work. I couldn't. But if you peel the onion, it was fear of talking honestly, transparently with your coach, right? Fear of being judged. Oh, you pulled out a fight, whatever it is, it comes down to that type of fear. So it's massive. So how do you practice it? Is you change your relationship with fear by saying, listen, if I change my relationship with fear, I change my mind. I change my mindset. Hmm. If I change my mind, I actually change my day. If I change my day, totally. I change my week, I change my life. And that's really the story. And everyone can do this. This isn't like I used the word outlier earlier. This isn't like you got to be, struck by lightning and now mm-hmm. you're this special person. Every single person can go, wow. Because you know what the fear spike feels like. It's butterflies in your stomach. It's where you step back emotionally, psychologically from somebody. So I can say to you, like, how nervous were you before your TED Talk?
Oh my gosh, I was super nervous. Right? I feel like I blacked out. Like I was left the building.
Right. And you could like Jason, how many shows have you done? Interviews now cumulatively between all the stuff?
Between this and between my own interviews all over TV and everything, probably 300, 400.
Right. But probably if you can think back to interview two.
Or that was a mess.
You're on there going, yeah, I'm Jason. Just play no attention to my voice because I can't breathe because I'm so fucking nervous. Why? Because I want people to like me because I feel like I've got something important to say. And what is the best fear? I told one of my coaches who's been, the guy's a professional stuntman. He's in Ireland. He's a professional stuntman. He's jumped out of buildings on fire, right, in a movie. He's been a martial artist, been a doorman, been in real fights, was a kickboxer. And he did one of our, COVID-19 pivots was creating a course called Essentials of Personal Safety, which is a 2-hour online course on things that you should know when you're out and about in the world in terms of situational awareness and personal safety. And so he's running one of these over in Ireland. So I check in with him on WhatsApp and I go, dude, how'd it go? He said, coach, I can't even tell you how nervous I was. I said, that's so cute because you'll jump like off of a building on fire. And I explained to him the reason he was nervous wasn't because he was scared and unprepared. It's because he cares, right? And so fear does weird things to us. If when you care, you can start to create the fear loop. And so that's what I mean by practice courage, where if I don't have a map, my coach's name is Dave. If Dave didn't have a map, he'd go, why am I so nervous? Maybe I'm not prepared. Maybe I don't know this as well. Maybe I'm not ready. It's how he starts to invoke like some of the new psychoses, like imposter syndrome. He starts doubting everything. But instead, he goes back, he looks at his map, he says, I'm in the fear loop, I need to get out of here. And he has a series of questions that he can go, why am I feeling this? And he can then Socratically, and this is the whole point, Alicia said earlier, like it's great having a coach because they can push you and point out, the goal of the NEAR program, the No Fear program, is that I insert this software into your brain and you become your own coach. Because in a real crisis, you don't have time to dial 911. I've got to, no matter what's going on in my home, I could be, and I go through, like, there are things that I get in my inbox or the phone call that create fear spikes for me. I want to make it very clear to everybody listening that just because I spent 30, 40 years studying fear and doing that, that I am not exempt from feeling it. That's what's beautiful about this is we created a new program. I haven't taught group classes in like 20 years. And I created a new program called our Garage Gym Gang. And we had 60 people sign up to this online program through Zoom. Last night, I had 3 hours sleep. I was so excited and nervous about this. And I get up and I tell my wife, Jessie, I'm really nervous about this. I haven't taught a group class in almost 20 years. And now I'm going to do it like on a phone where I can't even touch people. But I wasn't nervous because I didn't know my stuff. I was nervous because I wanted it to be powerful. I was nervous because I wanted it to be good. But I could have, if I didn't understand the math and what was going on in my mind, it could have been a horrible experience, right? And so that was, I turned fear into a fuel, and fear became my co-pilot. And I'm able to say to the audience, like I said this morning, I am so nervous about it. It's like I just opened my school and this is the grand opening. And it's full circle. 40 years ago, I started teaching, you know? And so we had that momentary celebration. But it's a way to like almost celebrate the fear, because if you can, again, these are all metaphors, that if I can use the fear spike as, remember the no doubt play on words, the fixation doesn't start until there's a moment of doubt. Remember the transition. Doubt becomes hesitation. Hesitation is like, oh no, shit. Okay, I've lost my opportunity. Why? I start to fixate. I fixate too long. That becomes my anxiety. And now I'm not doing anything. That's the inaction. But so we're telling people in our course, if you get to know doubt, you get to know fear. Because now you're using doubt as a cue to study, to research. I go, well, why would I doubt myself there? What's going on? So I stop there, and here's what happens. If you just let it, so like Alicia this morning, where you're saying like, wow, is it the new normal? And you start wondering, now you're in this map, this movie in your mind. But if you stop and go, why am I doubting what's going to happen, how this is going to go? You move from an emotional reactive movie where you sat there, you know, scrolling through Instagram for 2 hours instead of getting up and writing or working out, right? Because we're trying to avoid reality. Or you walk around in like this funk all day because you're thinking, remember last week, a couple of experts said that we're going to be locked down for a year, year and a half. Did you guys hear that? It was on yes. The but look at your face there. Yes, I heard that. Like, that's because, well, you have PTSD from that fucking tweet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, what are they talking about a year? I might not make it through 2 months. What do you mean a year? So we get a fear.
I can't homeschool my children for that long.
Right. So it's a very fascinating thing. So what we're doing is, without getting too woo-woo, we are cultivating greater self-awareness with this mind map. And greater self-awareness is the key to critical thinking. And if you can invoke critical thinking, guess what happens? You're out of the fear loop, because you can go, you know what? I'm scared, but I'm going to go towards that door. And that's what we tell people, is like, you know, in our personal defense models, we say, hey, everything needs to be guided by this idea of choosing safety. And sometimes choosing safety is charging the threat. And sometimes choosing safety is barricading. This is like full circle. You hit the gas or you hit the brakes. And everyone, there's a trick question, because everyone goes, gas or brakes. And I go, no, it depends on the scenario. There's a time to charge and there's a time to back out. And you need to be thinking critically. It's not about cowardice. It's about decision making.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Crazy, right?
Yes, that was you make life a lot easier when you talk, Tony, because I'm comprehending right now. I'm like,
Jason, I got to tell you this. I'll send you testimonials. I had a guy do my No Fear program. We have an online version, 90 minutes. So when I do like something for a company or somebody brings me in, it's a workshop and we spend the day together. There's exercises, there's communication. It's Socratic. It's give and take. Because I want, at the end of it, whenever I do a course, I like to tell people, I'm going to pretend we're never going to see each other again. So I want you to have this and work it. I want this. You're the hardware. I'm going to install the software. So
I like that.
So I have an online course. It's 90 minutes, and it's all it's my slides, right?
Yeah.
It's
amazing.
You can't see it, but they're, you know, mm-hmm. you know, it's the slides in the program, and it's me digitally talking through each one. And why it's only 90 minutes is because there's none of this. I'm not going, did you get that? Who's got a question? Let's do this mm-hmm. exercise. I get an email from a guy who just bought the course. This is on my kids. Okay. He goes, I've had anxiety for years I just did your course. Is it possible that my anxiety is gone? Is it like, how, like, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but you know, he goes like, is wow. it, I think my anxiety is gone. Is it possible? And I answer him, if I was your therapist, of course it's not possible. Right? But think about this, right? Sorry, therapist. If there was no fear, there'd be no need for therapy.
Yeah.
If no one had fear, there'd be no need for therapy.
I agree.
So, but this isn't about no fear. It's about getting to know fear, getting to use fear, about turning fear into fuel. Because there's no chance in our life that there won't be events like the roller coaster that is life, where you go, I'm scared, but I got to do this anyhow.
No, we have to do it. We're essentially, we've turned back into the warrior class that we kind of expelled for a long time. It's a different type of war. It's a different type of class that we have to get into, but we have to be able to, like you said, know fear, K-N-O-W fear. But also, one thing I like that you brought up on this show was that no doubt. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we're all doubting ourselves as that warrior. And I always tell people, I'm like, a warrior is not necessarily someone who goes and wages war, but you're waging war on a different thing right now. You're waging war on your fear.
Yeah.
And I love having Tony on the show because we get to have these talks. I get to sit back. I get to think for a while and activate that part of the hardware in my brain that you're installing this software, man. I love it, brother. I love you coming on.
Thanks, man. I mean, you can tell how emotional I get with this. I love this shit. Because, you know, there's a Latin expression, qui docet, dicet, those who teach, learn. Qui docet, dicet, those who teach.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I do this, I'm rewiring myself, right? Because every day, you know, 3 days ago, I was looking at the economics of what we're going through, the money that this is costing my company, the bullshit going on in DC with, you know, the disaster relief and stuff like that. And I said, if I don't do something, I could lose everything that I built for decades. Right. Mm-hmm. And I could have sat in the fear loop. When I said that, I had a moment of doubt, and that doubt became hesitation, and that hesitation became that fixation, and I caught it there. And that's what I mean. The self-awareness was, whoa, 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 you need to stop this right now, because this turns into a full whirlpool of the fear loop. And I immediately, you know, got up, went for a walk, got my body moving, because I know to get out of the fear loop, like movement is critical. Everyone listening to this, you know, develop a breathing practice, develop meditation, you know, and work your body, work. Because when you start to move, your brain starts to, you know, kind of like download ideas and stuff. And I immediately put an action plan together and started phoning like people I knew that could be resources to get me talking about stuff. And I talked to a buddy of mine who suggested, like literally, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday last week, we were just yakking. And he said, dude, like, you've been doing this for 40 years. How many followers do you have? I said, a lot. He said, well, like, why don't you just, like, people would love to work out with you, but they can't. They can't because it's a pandemic, but they might not be able to because of geography, because of finances. Why don't you do like a garage gym thing? And I was like, holy shit. And literally on Thursday, I stood that up. And today was the first class. We had 60 people enrolled in a class. I've already written out like a year of training because I've been doing this forever, right? So I could, you know, so I was up to last night till like 2 a.m. Preparing and freaking. But I want everyone to understand that it doesn't matter how successful you are, what position you're in, the universe is going to throw something at you that's going to put you in the fear loop. And you can't solve the other tactical problem or create a strategic solution if you're in the fear loop. Because when you're in the fear loop, you're making emotional choices. And oftentimes there's like inaction, you know, spelled I-N-A-C-T-I-O-N, inaction, doing nothing. And what we really need to be is inaction with a hyphen, in hyphen action. I'm doing something.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And that's the thing. That's the call to action is everybody. I mean, and that's why you have a lot of followers. That's why you have a lot of people that are really vested in your concepts, the Spear system and everything you've been doing for the past decades. And that's kind of like, I like that you're out here. I mean, we have, you know, we've done multiple shows together. We have a couple more coming up. And I like listening to you talk because it gets my brain moving. It gets my call to action going, as I'm sure it does with the audience.
Hope so.
Now you are absolutely, brother. Absolutely. I only plan on having you on for 25 minutes tonight because I know you're fried.
Yeah.
But I am so glad you came on, brother. Do you have any, we can find you at, hopefully I have the right, blowerspear.com.
Yeah, I got a new website that we built.
Actually. Oh, cool, man. Let's put it up.
Yeah. It's No Fear Now. KNOWFEAR Now. No Fear Now. And if people go to that, there is a, there's a couple of links. One is to our No Fear program, and it's 50% off now during the pandemic. And the code is right on there, so they can just go get it and download it. That's the website. Perfect. Beautiful. And then there's also our 2-hour orientation, which is amazing what my team put up. We've got 10 trainers running these courses all over the world. And if anyone's, we don't have any information about the Garage Gym gang up there yet. And that's not a, we're not working out. It's not like a CrossFit workout or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's all my self-defense stuff. It's as if you were in my group class back in the 80s. So it's kind of badass. But if you want information about that, just go to any of my social media, my Instagram, my last three posts talking about it.
Well, brother, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to leave out the last question for Alicia because
all right.
I'm having a co-host, man. It's awesome having a co-host.
Oh my goodness. I feel like I have to come up with a West Coast question versus the traditional last question I always ask. So I always end with the same question. I'm just going to keep it. And I have a few more Nick stories that I have to share with you when we have more time. But the question I ask everybody, because I'm always with a bunch of East Coasters, is how do you get your bagel? What's your favorite bagel and how do you order it?
Wow, that's an amazing question. I should bring my wife in here because this is something that we have like serious conversations about, you know, more this
yeah,
is
it's serious.
Uh-huh.
More serious than like, you know, November and the election. Not just kidding. But have you ever had a Montreal bagel? Not just an East Coast, but a Montreal bagel. Ask Nick. Montreal Real Bagel in St. Pierre.
Oh my gosh.
We actually, I'm kind of embarrassed. I should just say, I don't know what you're talking about and pretend it's kind of embarrassing that I know so much about bagels.
But
we actually have sometimes, not always, bagels shipped in from Canada.
Oh my gosh.
I don't blame you. Yeah.
I think I'm going to try this.
This is how we came up with this question. I got to interrupt and say here,
like people were like going, wow, that guy Blauer is really good. I was about to order his thing. And then he started talking about bagels.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Send me the link. Well, this is how we came up with the whole topic is I'm from born and raised in Southern California, Manhattan Beach. You know, the only, I was gone for 10 years when I was in the military and whatnot, but we don't have good bagels out here, and I love bagels. And when I went to New York for the first time, I was actually in Long Island. I had the best, I couldn't even believe these bagels. I had this everything egg bagel with salt, and it was just the most perfect thing I've ever had in my life. And when I told the people in the bagel shop that I was from California, I was from LA, they were so concerned for me that they started emptying. The guy was yelling to his wife, empty these bins, and poured bagels into bags. And I went back with like several dozen bagels to LA because they just knew I couldn't get them out here. So if you're saying Montreal bagels are the way to go, please send me the link. I will order some, but you cannot leave until you tell us your perfect bagel and how you order it.
Wow. I'm a huge poppy seed fan. I just love, okay. I love poppy.
Yes. Seed. I like and, poppy seed too.
And I mean, I love Lox bagel cream cheese, my favorite. Just a toasted bagel, just dripping with butter with.
Yes.
I'm simple.
He is killing me.
I got simple tastes. I like my, bagels flown in fresh from another country.
Well, Tony, I really appreciate it. Alicia is killing me with that question because I am so hungry right now for a bagel.
Right?
And I'm so close. New York's right up the road. Tony, we've touched on a ton of stuff tonight, man. I really appreciate you coming on again. KnowFearNow.com. KnowFearNow.com. For all you listeners out there, check out Tony. Follow him on all social medias. He's actually doing online training instruction right now. Tony, any last words, brother?
No, man. It was, always an honor to get on and share with you, Alicia. So cool to see you again. I literally didn't, when I think about it, we haven't met. It was like, I think your hair was in ponytail. You're wearing a tank top and shorts.
Yeah.
And you're also like, you're bigger in person, like on the screen here. You're like two weeks, so cool. And I'll post a little video about Nick and message me your Instagram so I can tag you in it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Will do.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody follow The Protectors. Actually, it's Jason Piccolo's The Protectors now streaming, or all major podcasts are streaming. I now have my own YouTube channel, youtube.com/Dr. Jason Piccolo. Follow us all over the place, and thank you again.